You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In the month leading up to the primary, there are some big decisions that Sacramento voters will have to make. The city will be electing a new mayor. And this month, we're sitting down with the four leading candidates. Former Sacramento City Councilmember Steve Hansen joined us last week. There's also former State Senator Dr. Richard Pan and current State Assembly member Kevin McCarty. Today, though, we are welcomed by epidemiologist and public health professional Dr. Flojan Kofer about why she's the best fit to lead Sacramento and her top priorities for the city if elected mayor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Okay, so you would be new to elected office if you're elected as mayor, but you have worked in Sacramento in multiple capacities in advisory roles, from Sacramento's Active Transportation Commission with the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department for Outreach and Community Advisory, the Mayor's Commission on Climate Change, Measure U, as well as an advisory committee member. Where did your dedication for public service in this capacity, where did it come from?
Honestly, it came from my parents. You know, they were both public school teachers, and I always say that they taught me that community really cares about one another. So if you lived in our neighborhood and you wanted to go to college, even if you didn't know my parents, you would just ring the doorbell in the afternoon, like in the fall or the summer, and you would say, hey, I want to apply to college, and they would sit you down at our dining room table and start working with you on your essays. And on the way out the door, they would be saying, like, don't forget to have your parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles call me about, you know, assistance with the FAFSA form, and, you know, really making sure that financial aid was accessible. It was a full service thing. But I also went through this, like, kind of snarky phase early on where I saw problems and I would say things like, somebody should do something about that. And my parents would march me into the mirror and say it again in the mirror, because you're somebody and you should. You don't get to abdicate responsibility or make it seem as if other people should handle something. You have a responsibility. And so what are you going to do about the problems that you're seeing and the challenges that we're facing?
Your background is in public health. You're an epidemiologist, yes. And that really looks at the determinants of health and diseases within a community. How did that transition to wanting to be in elected office, running for mayor?
Honestly, you know, it started when I came to California almost 20 years ago, and I was, you know, working at the Department of Public Health. And one of my first, you know, responsibilities in my job after my fellowship was to look at the Affordable Care Act and to send testimony to for what should be included in the preventive services. And I wrote up the section on including birth control with no copay. And when it was included, I was like, oh my goodness, this is huge, because I came to the Department of Public Health as a fellow and I not only didn't have health insurance, but I had to buy it on the private market, and the plan I could afford didn't include birth control. So I had to purchase it out of pocket. And so it was a full circle moment for me, but it also reminded me that, you know, epidemiology is about understanding how things are connected and what those determinants of health are. But there's also a real role for translating what we know into what we do. And I think that was really the first foray into, wow, policy really can change people's lives. And I'd like to be a part of that.
Was there a specific issue or perhaps flashpoint in the city of Sacramento and you working with the city where you were dissatisfied, perhaps, and you felt like, I need to run for mayor?
It started when I was on the Measure U Community Advisory Committee, in part because there were so many opportunities. It was really my time to
see.
And
that was a sales tax increase
that
voters approved.
Yes, that happened in 2018. It was set to expire. It was a half-cent sales tax. And the mayor and council put it on the ballot to be doubled and to be permanent. And so my first, you know, push was with community members to say, we need a real advisory committee for it. And then I could hear my parents in the back of my head saying, you're somebody, you should. So when it came time to apply to be on it, I felt we shouldn't just advocate for it to exist and not participate. So I applied and I ended up being the chair for four terms. And I was frustrated because voters were promised that those dollars were going to be spent primarily on three things: inclusive economic development, affordable housing and homelessness, and the arts community. And the dollars weren't spent that way. So we were really pushing for honor the promises that you made to voters when this was put on the ballot. And then we started saying, okay, well, what are the opportunities to be able to fit into what the city's already doing? And so we were looking at things like the process and efficiency recommendations that we paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for. There were 39 of them, and largely didn't implement. And that could have saved us the dollars that now we're having this conversation about the deficit. There's at least $50 million a year in savings in those recommendations that if we had implemented them 4 years ago, not only would we not be in a deficit, but we'd probably have $150 million extra dollars at our disposal.
So if you are elected mayor, day one, what is your first priority?
Well, moving into the office and getting some good local art up on the wall. but really, you know, my first two priorities are to make sure that how we govern reflects the needs of Sacramento. So first and foremost, our city needs some goals. We need to be able to say, this is what we're going to do. I have been talking publicly about we are the capital of the fourth largest economy on planet Earth. And it is unacceptable to me that we have 1,500 kids and families with children sleeping on our streets. And so by the end of my first term, I want that to change. And that's going to require us to collaborate with our business community and our nonprofits and our neighborhood associations and the 30,000 people who wake up early on Thanksgiving to do Run to Feed the Hungry to support the food bank. It's going to take all of us to be able to do that. But once we have a goal, I literally see the wheels start moving in people's heads about how they can fit into making goals happen. And so I think it is the responsibility of our mayor to put on the agenda, what are the priorities? So our city staff know what they're working towards and are not constantly in crisis mode and, you know, changing week to week, that they know this is what we're working on for the next 2 years until the next election. And here are our annual goals. So we know what we're working towards to be successful. So that's step one. And then I think step two is, how do we get more community and voices involved in the process? Because whether I'm in East Sacramento and Land Park or I'm in Meadowview or Del Paso Heights, what I hear from everyone is we are brought in on decisions too late and only after the fact. And I don't want that to be the case anymore. We don't have to only use 5 days advance notice to talk about things. And so I'd love to have a process that's much more like the state, where the mayor and the council and our department chairs have an opportunity to introduce policies, and then they go to our boards, committees, and commissions for advice, for review, that our neighborhood associations get an opportunity to weigh in and say, we support this, or here's how you could amend it, long before it comes back to the council for a vote. And I think if we streamline and organize our decision making in a way that actually respects the people who live in Sacramento, we can get better outcomes, we'll get less pushback, and we'll have an opportunity to be able to, you know, avoid some of the challenges and hurdles that some of our previous proposals have you know, had encountered on their way, in part because people are frustrated by how you do things. My parents always said, it's not always what you do, it's how you do it. And I think that's incredibly important when it comes to governance.
Well, I think one of the biggest examples of this is arguably the biggest issue that Sacramento faces, and that is homelessness. People who are housing insecure or are unsheltered. I mean, this is something that Mayor Steinberg, since he was first elected, I mean, this was an issue that he wanted to tackle. There are many elected officials currently across the aisle that will say kind of the same reasons. It's a mental health issue. It is an affordable housing issue. But I think everyday residents don't necessarily feel like, despite the unprecedented investment in money, that their neighborhoods are better, you know, and that this issue is getting resolved. And numbers would also confirm that as well. What could you do differently as mayor that would alleviate conditions for those who are unsheltered or housing insecure, you know, once you take office within your first year, within your first 6 months?
Yeah, well, step one is that at the end of this year, our insufficient rent stabilization policy is going to expire. And that's the one that says basically that rents can go up 10% per year. And so the folks that I'm running against think that's sufficient, and that's, they want to just continue it and that's it. When I talk to people, they tell me their rents are too high, and that even when they started out being able to afford their apartments in a few years, that 10% increase that's not accompanied by a 10% increase in their income is making it so it's hard to afford housing. So I'd like to start there. I think we can have real rent control in the city of Sacramento, and that's something that I really want as that policy is set to expire for us to push for, because it's something across the board that people in Sacramento are saying is a real problem and is contributing to us going from 3,900 people experiencing homelessness in 2019 to now 10,000. And so we really need to be able to crack down on that. But even more important than that, you know, every day I talk to people who say, I am so heartbroken by seeing people outside without their basic needs met. And so we need safe ground. We need places where people can do laundry and use the bathroom and have a shower and charge their cell phones and have some shelter from the elements. And we need to set those up quickly. And I know that there has been pushback about where those sites should be, and they need to be distributed across the city of Sacramento. And there should be trash pickup, and there should be, you know, good neighbor policies that are established in advance so that we all know what to expect and how we're going to engage with one another so that we're not creating blight or harming our communities. And part of that is having those conversations up front. And why I'm excited to be running for mayor is that the mayor here has the benefit of having 15 staff people. So we are better equipped than any of our city council members to really be able to do that community engagement. And that's one of the things that I'm running my campaign like this. This is a people-powered campaign with people all across the region being involved. And that is how we are going to govern as well. Having community conversations, not imposing our will on people, but bringing them in early into the conversations, viewing them as partners, not just as obstacles to navigate around.
And that, I mean, one of the issues that you brought up and possible solutions is something that Mayor Steinberg argued for as well, that this should be shouldered by every district in the city. But when it comes to the city of Sacramento, the mayor is just one vote.
Yes.
And so you do have more staff, but you still have to work with your council members to get your initiatives, your policies across the finish line. And
Absolutely.
You would be the face of the city, but you are one vote. How would you work with council members who are also responsible for their own constituents and when you perhaps disagree about the best solutions to move forward?
Well, you know, one of the things about being a public health professional that I think best equips me to handle this is, look, every time public health has an idea, everybody hates it. We know that's part of the process. So we're not intimidated by the chaos of when we introduce something, people say no. When we first introduced seatbelts, people called us tyrants and said that this is un-American and that we are infringing upon their freedoms. And so we had to listen through that and still participate in the ways that humans do you know, change and accept change. And so that's what I'm bringing to the table is I'm going to work with every single council member in every single district to make sure that we are engaging with the people who live there up front in mm-hmm. advance, not after we've made a decision and people are angry about it, but making them part of the process. Because what we know is that success has many parents and failure is abandoned. We know that when people feel like they're being imposed upon, they will oppose you, even if it's something that they kind of agree with. But when you bring them in from the front and you make it partly their idea and it's their success to have, they will help spur the success. They will help you to figure out ways to be able to get other people on board, to be able to combat some of the challenges you're facing. And so that's really where the partnership with each and every council member will come into face. We're going to listen to communities. We're going to bring them in meaningful ways. We're going to talk to the people who are most impacted, and we're going to come up with solutions together. And I think that's the major distinction between me and the other people who are running, is that I have experience doing that. I'm running a campaign that is setting us up for that type of success and engagement. And I'm looking forward to actually governing. I'm looking forward to people yelling at us and saying no up front and us saying, no is the least interesting thing about what you said. Why? And once we get to the why is I'm concerned about safety in my community. I don't want there to be needles and trash strewn about. I want, like, those are things we can address. Your no is actually the least interesting thing about your position. I really want to understand why you're there and what we can do to be able to alleviate those concerns mm-hmm. because your no is only predicated on your why.
That also involves partnerships not only with city council members, also the county. I mean, there is, on paper, a partnership between the city and the county, but it has been challenged in recent years. And even, you know, within the last year with the new district attorney, there are lawsuits as well stemming from encampments. How would you overcome these hurdles? Because you would inherit this relationship to work in tandem with the county.
Well, the beautiful thing is that right now in my day job, which I'm on leave from, you know, until the election, but we are actually the technical assistance provider for the county for the community health improvement plan. And so I have good relationships with the county. We work with them constantly. And what I know is that there are plans already in place, our local homeless action plans, about stabilizing people who are in imminent risk of homelessness, about, you know, addressing some of the long-term needs when it comes to affordable housing. And so what I want to do is take us from just having the collaboration being mostly relational to it actually having outcomes that we are both responsible for. And one of the things that I've already started having conversations with our supervisors about is having joint meetings, because there's more than just homelessness that we need to coordinate on, and having all, you know, all five of the supervisors and all nine of the members of the city council on the dais at the same time, actually allocating, you know, resources and also passing policy together, eliminates that need for a game of tag. You can still have smaller groups of people do the planning, but when it comes to making the decisions, we should be doing it together and we should be hearing, because we are overlapping in our jurisdictions and we need to work together in a very practical sense. And that also needs to have some transparency with our communities.
Another priority of yours is public safety. You know, and some would also use the word crime. And language is important. Choice of words is important. And you lead with public safety versus crime. Why is that lens important?
Well, first of all, public safety is about the feeling of being able to move through your community without being worried about being harmed. And as the only woman in this race, as a Black woman, and as someone who, you know, frequently has to navigate the world, you know, by myself, I am very concerned with public safety. But what I understand is that none of us wake up in the morning hoping to call 911. And so when we only invest our dollars in response, we don't have the opportunity to actually invest in prevention. And what I've seen in Sacramento is that we went 2 years with no youth homicides, with no young people hanging RIP banners on the fences of their
high schools. Before 2020.
Right. 2017 to 2020 was actually over 2 years, right? And then just as the drivers of violence were going up, we kind of disbanded that network and stopped doing what we were doing that made us successful. And unfortunately, in public health, this happens to us a lot. We are victims of our own success. And when we do something well, then people start saying, do we need to continue doing it? Yes, we do. And so I'm really invested in having a public safety department that includes emergency response, but that is not only limited to emergency response, and also making sure that the response is correct. Because if your house is on fire, you certainly don't want somebody coming along who's a mental health professional. You want the fire department to show up and to extinguish the fire. And so I want to make sure that the response matches the need. And that's part of what analyzing our 911 data in conjunction with UC Davis will allow us to do, to be able to figure out how do we have an emergency response and a public safety department that is meeting the needs of 2024, not 1960 when it was set up.
Hmm. You know, also in your language and how you describe public safety on your campaign page, you know, there wasn't mention of Sacramento police specifically. I mean, you do mention emergency response. And I know that you've been on an advisory board with the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office, so you do have involvement with law enforcement. How do you view law enforcement in our community? What do they do right? Because ultimately, you would need to work with Chief Kathy Lester and the department if elected mayor.
Yeah, I worked with Chief Lester when she was Deputy Chief Lester under Chief Hahn on the heat table with Sacramento Act, which is hiring, equipment, accountability, and training. And part of that was really looking from a community-based lens on how is our department operating. And I've been really, you know, quite frankly, disappointed in, you know, some of the pushback that we've gotten from our department about the Fourth Amendment violations, about some of the ways that we engage in accountability. And here's why. Any healthy organization should be able to handle criticism and should be eager to be able to make changes so that they can work better. And I was really appreciative of the way that Chief Lester laid out what public safety is and how the police department can't do it by itself. But that also needs to be coupled with a culture change in understanding how we're engaging with communities. When I look at stats that say Black men make up 5% of the population in Sacramento, 40% of the stops, and 82%, the highest percentage, result in no citation, that means that every time you're stopping those people who are in that 82% and you don't issue a citation, you were harassing them and you were wasting precious dollars. And I work hard for my money, and I think most people in Sacramento do. And so we want you to be doing things that are actually contributing to safety, not harassing people and eroding trust. And so part of what I want us to do is to look to people like Dr. Letitia Watson, who's our Office of Public Safety Accountability Director, who is saying, who's a former police chief and a national expert, and is saying, we're not following national protocols on how we engage with communities from the perspective of policing. That's what I want to see happen, and that's the role of police. I want them to move away, like Los Angeles Police Union has proposed, which is the largest union in the state. They've identified 28 call types that uniformed officers should not be responding to that are better suited for someone else. That's what I want our department to be looking at and saying, how can we best participate in a public safety, you know, initiative, and not just owning things that we're not equipped for and that we don't need? Because if we are able to do that, then our police department can actually focus on solving crime, can focus on the things that people are saying they want them to do, can increase their response times because you have the same number of people, but they're actually working efficiently instead of just being spread thin and not doing what works and keeps us safe.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with epidemiologist and public health professional Dr. Flojan Kofer, who is running for Sacramento mayor. We only have a few minutes left, and I'm curious. Mayor Daryl Steinberg is rounding out his second term. How do you think he was as mayor?
I think, you know, Mayor Steinberg came in with having had a lot of wins at the state level and really being ambitious about what he could do at the local level. But I think, you know, the challenge, and I'm going to quote Neil deGrasse, or I'm going to paraphrase Neil deGrasse Tyson here about, like, too often we have attorneys and people with sort of the same backgrounds who are engaging in public service. And he says, where are the teachers? Where are the construction workers? Where are the public health professionals? Where are the scientists? Where are other people who have a different lens? And so what I would say is what works at the state level doesn't always translate to what works at the local level. You have to be deeply embedded in these communities. You have to be willing to listen to people. You have to recognize that, you know, yes, you're the mayor, but you don't always have to be the person who owns something or is putting forward the initiative. And we need to take the time to be able to push things forward. And I actually think some of the things that were happening at the state level, if we had brought them to the local level, like the process of introducing legislation so people have time to weigh in, would have possibly made things like the Department of Community Response, which I actually think is his best initiative since he's been on the council, much more of a success because people would have been involved in them. And so I actually have the benefit of learning from the things that he experimented with. And being the person who comes before you is, you know, that's the hard part, right? You're trying to do something different in the face of new challenges. But what I would say is, you know, I think his intentions were good on a lot of things. He comes with a mental health background and some of the things that he certainly did, the MHSA, Mental Health Services Act, the millionaire's tax at the state level, seeded programs that I've directed. Right. So I appreciate those things. And also I have the benefit of hindsight, and hindsight is 2020, to be able to see what didn't work and how I can take those lessons and apply them to the next administration. And I'm really looking forward to coming in and having success based on those lessons learned and also being the model for somebody else to come in and say, hey, here's what Flo wasn't able to do. And I'll pick up the baton and do that next.
A big hurdle, a big challenge that you're going to inherit comes down to money, funding, and you touched upon this. The city is facing like an estimated $50 million budget deficit, and that doesn't mean it's only going to be reserved to the upcoming fiscal year. How will you prioritize spending for essential city services?
Yeah, first and foremost, I want us to look at how we're spending money and is it efficient? Because, again, looking at those process and efficiency recommendations, we have at least $50 million in proposed savings that if we had done that 4 years ago, we would be in a much better position. And so I'm always going to look at how do we work smarter and not harder. And then next, I'm going to be looking at what are the other opportunities for revenue generation? That's one of the core principles that's right there on page 48 of our budget, is how we are supposed to be budgeting in community, at the guidance of people who live here, and also thinking about revenue. And part of that is also benefiting our partnerships. How are we working with our business community? How are we working with our nonprofits? Not just as funders, but also as key partners. How are we mobilizing the people who live here, who care about this community and want to help? And so I'm going to be looking at ways that we can be efficient in how we do things, how we partner, and how we get to our goals. And that's going to be, I think, a real shift in terms of the role that we see our government playing, which is exactly the role of, you know, the narrative change maker in the mayor's office.
Finally, if you are elected, you would become the first Black woman to serve as mayor of Sacramento. Is that more than a milestone for you?
It certainly is a milestone. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about my earrings and my choice of colors that I wear and how, you know, I show up in the world. And I think part of what is historic about it is that I have the opportunity to reshape for an entire generation and generations to come what a professional looks like, what a mayor looks like and sounds like, and what that experience is. And so I don't take that lightly. Being a Black woman is not the most interesting thing about me, but it is an interesting thing about me. It is unique. And I think it offers a lot of opportunity for women to be able to see themselves, for Black girls to be able to see themselves, for people who don't show up in standard ways to be able to see themselves and having a role in governance. And I'm excited about all the dividends that will yield in our ability to pass policy, to bring new voices to the table, and to really create long-term and sustainable change.
Dr. Kofor, thank you for the time.
Thank you for having me.
And that is epidemiologist, public health professional, Dr. Flojan Kofor, who is running for Sacramento mayor. We spoke with former city council member Steve Hansen last week. Next week, we welcome state assembly member Kevin McCarty, and former state senator Richard Pan will round out our conversations with the leading mayoral candidates. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.